Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. We prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnson, with today's guest.
Hi, I'm John Kirshner. I'm the Chief of Police and Director of Public Safety here at Houston Baptist University. I came here in 2015. I had retired from the Houston Police Department in 2010. I was teaching an adjunct history at Kingwood College, and the position opened up here for safety director, and coming home to one of my colleges that I had my master's degree from, I thought it was an opportunity. I came here and was the safety director, basically, on OSHA matters, and a year later, they asked me to be the chief of police. So since 2016, I've been the chief of police here at the Houston Baptist University Police Department. We have 12 members of the department, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, till the good Lord comes back, and then we work half a day that day.
John, I tell you, I'm just sitting here amazed at your biography and your resume. I mean, your family, 65 years continuous police service, beginning with your father, who you're named after, it looks like, and from Cleveland, Ohio, great city. It was last assigned to the Criminal Intelligence Division, specializing in organized crime, gangs, financial crimes, and for gathering intelligence and monitoring events and activities that posed a threat to the community, including terrorism.
Yes, sir.
Wow. Now, you got to tell me some what that was like.
Well, I had always, when I came on the department, I want to clear the air a little bit, so you know, I did not want to be a policeman. That was the last thing, and my father always encouraged me to drive a garbage truck rather than be a police officer. So I had gone to school to be a school teacher. I went to one of the finest schools, I thought, in Georgia for teaching. At that time was Georgia Southern College. It was a small college down in Statesboro near Savannah, about 60 miles from Savannah. Nobody even knew it was there until the Allman Brothers played the song Statesboro Blues, and then suddenly everyone had to know where we were at. And then I switched over at the encouragement of my professors to history, and I went to teach secondary school, and I wanted to be a school teacher. That's what I wanted to do. And but I kind of got wandering, and I wound up driving an 18-wheeler for the Cleveland Orchestra around the country and enjoyed that quite a bit. And finally, I told my father I had tried everything else, and I thought I would try a police officer's position. And I applied for several. I was hired in Las Vegas and in Houston, and I chose Houston. I didn't think Las Vegas was a good place to raise a family, if and when I had one. And so I came to Houston in 80 and started the academy in 81 and had a good career. So to me, intelligence was one of those things that it gave you room and time to develop. It wasn't a matter of just constantly running call after call, problems and victims. Some things you could solve, some you couldn't. And so I got over there in 96. I had been on some task force. It's a long story, but I had been on some federal task forces and had done some paper crimes back then with organized crime. And in 96, I went over to the Criminal Intelligence Division to do gangs. And there was several levels of gangs. Everybody thinks the kids on a street corner doing this, you know, in one kind of gang. But then there was, imagine an Amway. It's kind of like a criminal Amway with the top being where the real money is. And we went after them because they were pretty much unmolested, I guess, if you'd say, by the criminal justice, until we found out that they were lying on documents and taxes and everything else. And we went after them for that.
You know, when I think about your career at the Houston Police Department, that's a major department. I learned that on our HBU Israel trip in detail with one of your colleagues. I mean, describe, if you would, just the size of that department and the dimensions of the Houston Police Department.
Well, when I came on, there were less than 2,000 of us. When I left, we had hit 5,000.
Wow.
And Houston is such a big place compared to Cleveland.
Yeah.
I grew up around policemen, and so I understood how it worked, but the immensity of Houston, and it's so widespread, and the makeup of the city is so, and it is cosmopolitan. You've got, I don't think there's a country not represented here. Maybe Tierra del Fuego, but everybody else is here. So you have this kind of uniqueness that is Houston, I think. It always kept you coming back.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what the draw was. That it is so much, the department is struggling, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It is struggling to meet its the requirements of the people and the public, because it's put such a strain on it, and you know they put more officers on the street, and then those officers generate cases that go to detectives who are overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And then the courts are overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I don't think Houston's never been this big, and so the problems are exacerbated just by mere volume.
And John, where I live on the west side, I mean, they have to be building, I kid you not, at least nearly 1,000 homes around me.
Right.
I mean, if you know where Symington
yes,
is,
sir.
They're building homes beyond Symington. Mm-hmm. And there is no, I mean, the stubs are done, the plumbing, it's just unbelievable. Of course, I live in the fastest growing city in the state of Texas, Fulshear, Texas. Mm-hmm. Who would have ever thought?
Yes.
I mean, so I see that little department out there realizing, whoa, growth. But here in Houston, now you went, what an incredible background. I mean, you could write a book, all the experiences you've had. You decided to come to HBU, and here you are, the chief of police and director of public safety at HBU at this time in your career. Why?
Well, I wanted to be a teacher. That's always been my desire. And it seemed like Providence always moved me. You need over here. When I had come on the department, I was cursed with responsibility. And it just seemed like it always went that way. When I was in the academy, I had the guys voted me president of the class. And I said, now they gave me responsibility. I'd been offered a job somewhere else. And I said, well, maybe this isn't for me. So I stayed on. And then when I came out of the academy, it was, my father had always, God rest his soul, my father always told me that my badge was the ticket to the greatest show on earth. And it was every day was something new. So you never got bored. It was always a challenge. It was always a problem. And so I kept at that. The department used me a number of times to write documents, much to my chagrin, because I always want to be out there, you know, out there. I wound up writing. And I'd say, well, now I want to go back on the street. And they'd say, great, we need you over here. And because back in those days, there were very few people with degrees and less with teaching experience.
Yeah.
And so that's how I wound up at the academy. And then talking to the young, the people in the academy coming through, I had them in the first week, aside. And the first week I would teach them the history of the Houston Police Department. That was my field, was history.
Wow.
Then the second, I'd come in the middle and I taught them professional police methods, how to act like a police officer, how to behave in front of people, et cetera, and so on. And then the last of it was radicalism and terrorism. So they had, and I saw them in fresh, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, in the middle, kind of getting more seasoned, at the end, waiting to get out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And teaching was always my thing, but it seems like I kept being moved over. So I had decided to go after a master's degree. My wife was on me because I was reading a book a week and said, you know, you really should do something if you're going to do that. So I looked at other colleges and I found HBU and I was enamored by it. I really liked it, the smallness of it. Georgia Southern, when I went there, was small. So there was it clicked right away. And the field was basically all history classes. So I really enjoyed it. When I came out, I was getting ready to retire, and I was going to look for a teaching position, and 9/11 happened.
Wow.
Well, you don't jump out in the middle. We didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And they grabbed me up into that, and I had studied Islam academically here. And so somebody asked, like, what do you know about this? No one knew anything, so I had to teach a class on that. And then it morphed into a radical because people didn't understand different, not the Earth First people and some of the other radical groups. I had to teach it to the officers because they weren't aware of it. So when I finally decided to retire, I wanted to get back into teaching, and I had been teaching since 2003 as an adjunct at Kingwood College. And I never had a bad day except the day I left. I loved the young people, and I loved it. You know, I was teaching history, it was my field. And I was also working in the department. I like to stay busy. And it was coming down. Now, I'd been there 12 years teaching. I'd been retired in 10, so I had been teaching now 5 years past retirement. And Mr. Holmes approached me here and said, you know, they're looking for a safety director. And I thought, well, I'll try that. And I wound up opening into the chief of police position. And we've got some great people. And I'll tell you right now, this has been a great experience for me.
Well, you know, I so admire all of you men that are serving here. And we have such a safe environment. And I credit you and your colleagues for that. I mean, a parent, a grandparent who sends their son or daughter here, they want to know their safety, and there is safety. Speak to that.
Well, I talked earlier about the responsibility. I was the oldest of 9 kids, and my father, you know, said, if anything happens to them, you know, so he put this kind of onus on me, you know, at a very small age. The university is an interesting place. It's kind of forgotten sometimes that we're here.
Yeah.
That's a good thing and bad thing. I like to get out there and let people know Houston Baptist University is here and very active. And one of the nice things about the security here is, as some of it is the environmental part, we have a fence around here. There is no college in Texas or university that has a fence around
it.
So that helps a little bit. I mean, like I told somebody the other day, they broke into the pyramids, a fence, but it is a deterrent.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we have, you know, the cameras, but cameras are more after the fact, sadly. My people believe very much in the service model of policing, where we get out and be seen, because I always tell them the safest place I've ever seen is when the cop's standing somewhere. Can I park my car here? I'm going to be here 8 hours. I can almost guarantee your car will be safe. You know, so we get out and show the flag, as we say. And my people are really good at that. We've got a really great team right now. So it's a combination of a lot of things. Plus, we have on the phones, the Safe Colleges app, where they can hit 911 Shield and they can tell us something's going on, or if somebody's prowling around or shouldn't be on campus. And our people are very quick to get there. I expect it's a good response time, safe response time, not too fast, but safe. And so everybody working together does help. I mean, that extra eyes that people bring. And I've had to talk to parents because things still happen.
Sure.
I mean, you know, we're not immune from what's going on in the world and in the country.
No.
And but I'm going to tell you something. The students who are here are different. I mean, they're a different cut. We'll have an argument one time. A young lady was having an argument with another one, and 4 other co-eds came around her and said, can we talk about it? Can we? I mean, they basically disarmed who was angry. Because I've never been talked to like that. So, I mean, it's kind of, that's not an unusual thing where they de-escalate themselves.
And the faith environment doesn't eliminate problems, but it certainly changes the atmosphere of what a typical university's like, where there is no Christian faith, et cetera.
Exactly. You see that. You know, you really do. And most of the young people who come to college want to get an education, and they're not looking for trouble, and so you have that part. But having the faith does change the you can tell the attitude and the mood of things.
Now, are you all based? Where are you based at here?
We're in the Bradshaw Fitness Center.
Okay.
We have a blue light at night if you want to see it. The blue light's on, so you can find us. We're on the backside, the freeways here, and we're on the backside.
And then you patrol the campus and all the different aspects of, because about 150 acres here. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty sizable piece of property in a city like Houston,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. And we also extended out the patrol to the Pillars Shopping Center.
Oh, yes.
And CVS. And part of that was because our people go there. They go to the Pillars for pizza and hamburgers at 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning. I mean, they do. Hard to believe.
College Central Standard Time.
They're studying, yes.
Yeah. With their girlfriend or boyfriend.
Exactly.
Studying hard.
So they're out there, and I want to keep them as safe as possible. The same thing with CVS. Our people go in there, and it has paid dividends.
Yeah.
The calls have gone down, and their CVS manager loves it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so do the customers.
And Pillars, for those who don't know, is our commercial property facing Southwest Freeway, Salada and Chick-fil-A and all the rest of it. Quite an operation over there. You know, I want to just ask you to kind of reminisce. Oh, two things I want to ask. One is, let me vent for a minute, maybe you'll vent too. Who thought up this crazy notion of defund the police or reimagine the police? And the catastrophic realities of what's happening in those cities, has that impacted the morale of police officers?
The whole idea of defunding the police, it's more of a reimagining.
Uh-huh.
There's some different thoughts on that. There are some people who want to redo all of society.
Yeah.
I mean, this is my belief.
Well, I'd like to hear your thought.
They want to, and your cities are changing. And as you've said, some of these smaller towns are being gobbled up as these mega cities. And
yes.
We were told about this when we were young, about the mega city.
Yeah.
And so the departments are struggling. They don't know what to do. You have judges coming in and you have prosecutors who are struggling because they have a new philosophy on crime. And this is not something new. We saw this in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
In 69, I did not want to be a police officer. I was worked for about 9 months with the Cleveland Police Department in the Record Room Report Center. So I was exposed to, as a civilian, to what was going on. And the philosophy then was, it's too hard on some of these criminals and such, and people doing that, we need to soften up. There was movement in the federal government to lighten sentences. When the federal government swung around and said, okay, we're going to hammer you, you're fixed penalties. So this is not something new. We saw this in the 60s, and now here we are again. And probably have the same reaction is that there'll be a backlash to it.
Yeah.
Defunding the police, the good people out here, the people who know, they don't want to defund the police. If anything, they want the police to get more active.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's going, in the long run, it's going to work out. Now, does it affect morale? I think it affects morale for cities like Portland and places like that because they've got it rough. I can remember some of the problems in the 60s with riots in Cleveland. And the morale of the policemen then, when they were, certain things happened and their morale went low. But morale of police, as I've seen, it ebbs and flows. It's like, you get a good team in baseball, or maybe a good football team. I'll just go ahead and leave that one. But you get a good team and you hit your spot. I mean, everything's moving, the team's top shelf, and then the second baseman leaves, perhaps, or a shortstop. Or somebody retires, or a guy hurts himself, or somebody gets traded, and then you start the process. The next year's kind of dull, and you start rebuilding again. And it's like, I think I've seen that in the few years I've been around, that's pretty much what happens. And your morale goes up and down, the same thing with police work. There is some adapting, though, because the people that scream the loudest are saying a lot of things that these young policemen don't know what to think.
Sure,
police absolutely. Officer, they're looking for support, and I think the good people out here, as I've seen, the good people support. So my father told me one time that there was a riot in Cleveland, and a guy who had burned a building ran through the backyards of a poor neighborhood, and he said the neighbors turned on their lights because of they had the clotheslines up. They didn't want the policemen to hit the clotheslines.
Oh, yeah.
So, and he said, when we were gone, then they would turn them off because they didn't want people to know they were helping. But that, and he, you know, I think that was what, we know that deep down inside the good people understand we're here for a reason. You know, like John Locke and the great philosopher said, you know, you give up a certain amount. In nature, everybody's equal and it's all good, but there's some men that do evil.
Yeah.
So we give up a portion of our liberties and a portion of our treasure to have men protect us from them so we can go about and conduct our business and intercourse.
Absolutely. You know, I'll tell you, my wife and I pray for the police officers and our first responders because, you know, in my career, I've seen a lot of tragedies of teen suicide and wrote a book on that. And, you know, I think about the things a police officer deals with, and it's just, it's enormous. I mean, wow, it's like way beyond a pastor. I mean, you guys deal with everything. Now, I noticed that you taught, police officers, so you have a team now. What kind of mentorship do you do with your team here? What are they, if you boiled it down to the three or five key things that you try to keep in front of your men, what is it?
Well, first, I sat down one day and I explained to them, I said, I don't know from a woman's perspective, only from a man's. I said, a man goes through basically three phases in his life. The first is he battles. He battles to get on the team. He battles through first grade. He battles through high school. He gets the girlfriend. He wants to be first, and he does that. The second one is he builds. He builds his family. He builds his reputation. He builds his career. In the last phase, if he's fortunate enough to get to it, he bequeaths. He starts to teach others. And that's pretty much passes on his knowledge. And I like to think that's what I'm doing with them. I've sent them out for training. We have one of the few universities that has a hostage negotiator. Now, that's not, we're expecting that kind of a situation.
Sure.
But they bring, all of our people are trained in crisis training and people in crisis. But the hostage negotiator is exposed to a lot more different things. He brings a skill set, and I keep him on at night. Because the dark hours of the soul, as they say, you know, those dark hours are tough on. And somebody said, well, you know, these kids have got food and everything else, and they've got it made. Well, they still have a lot of pressure. We've had to deal with that here at the university, and every university deals with it. And I like to think my people go in there, sit down and talk to them. We direct them for help. If we have to sit with them all night, we will and get them some help. And we've got good... the residence assistants are good. So it all plays together. But as far as my people go, I try to explain to them that how important they are and how their parents have entrusted their future family with us. I mean, that's it's so amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, it is.
The future of their family is residing here.
Yeah.
Not only that, but when the sun goes down, the average age around here falls to about 19.8 years, and they're looking to each other for direction. So we're the mature ones on campus. It's a frightening thought, but it's true. And so we're going to have problems. We've had a few, but most of them have been stuff that was just judgment calls. You know, some student's thief, we have to look at it from the direction of, you know, why are they taking it? Some of them just don't belong here.
Yeah, sure.
Some make bad judgment, and that's sometimes a lot. Again, they're learning. They're at that point where they're moving from the battle part to the build part, and they are closer in many cases to 16 than they are to 30.
Yeah.
So their judgment's still a little cloudy.
Sure.
And it's good to see things from that perspective as a police officer.
Yeah, totally. John, I cannot thank you enough for you and your colleagues and the work you're doing here at Houston Baptist University. And my associate, Clay Porter, keeps me informed about you guys, and I'm just so grateful to you. And on behalf of all of us, we just want to thank you for the work you're doing and just what a vital part you are. So grateful to you. You can know that when you send your son or daughter, grandson or granddaughter to HBU, that there's responsible, very capable people that are providing safety and then academic training, spiritual reinforcement to send out into this world what, John, I know you and I would agree the graduates of this school are desperately needed in this dark, challenging world.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you think about I read an article the other day that 112 Americans have died in Mexico in these tourist resorts, mm-hmm. and, you know, cartel stuff, and very underreported, and a tragedy. But we live in a world that's different. I remember 30 years ago when you could just go over to Matamoros and get a pinata and come back, and it was no big deal. Mm-hmm. And the world's changed, hasn't it?
Yes.
And all the more that we need Captain John and his team, the police department at Houston Baptist University. Learn more about HBU at hbu.edu/admissions, 281-649-3211. Our graduate school, hbu.edu/grad, G-R-A-D, 281-649-3269. And we celebrate the fact that HBU now has students in 42 states across the United States. Doesn't matter where you live, you can benefit from this incredible academic training at hbuonline.com. We have people answering questions that you may have about how to be online, 855-428-1960. John, I want to thank you so much for coming today. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for the legacy you're passing. You're bequeathing that to others now. You're playing a very vital role.
Thank you, Ian. I appreciate the opportunity.
Here at HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.